welcome to the Real Estate Matters podcast. I'm Stuart Norton with the Alabama Center for Real Estate at the University of Alabama, and joined today by my co-host, James. Say hey.
Oh, hey, what's going on, Stuart? How you doing, sir?
Hey, I'm doing great, thanks. And we have a wonderful guest today, Hunter Harrelson, down from the at the Alabama Gulf Coast. Hunter Harrelson with Beach Ball Properties. Welcome to the show, Hunter.
Happy to be here, Stuart.
Yeah, great to have you again. I think it was about this time last year we did our first episode.
I think so, because we were hitting on, I think we were talking about the Phish concert.
And
we were
That's about right.
Getting started. So,
Yeah. And Phish came back to Alabama this summer, Huntsville, the Orion Amphitheater. Good to see them earlier. It was about a month ago, early July. So Hunter, just kind of set the stage here. Just tell us what's going on with Beach Ball Properties.
So we are growing like gangbusters. Yeah, I think last year when we talked, we were probably somewhere in the high hundreds, maybe close to 200 properties. Over the winter, we just, I guess I should tell the listeners out there, we were actually awarded the 2022 Vacation Rental Management Company of the Year by Verma.
That's awesome. Yeah, I saw some of that in the news. Congratulations on that. That's a big big award. Great recognition.
Huge. We're actually headed back in October. They're doing the annual conference in Orlando. We're going to turn it into a Disney trip with the kids. And being since we're the reigning national champions, we figure we need to be there and be there
with
the right colors on. So we're actually taking a lot of our team down there with us. We want to give them some learning opportunities at the different speaking engagements. I'm actually speaking on two panels. Ginger will be speaking on one, talking about our branding, talking about our growth strategies. And, that ties back into that, what I was mentioning on growth. After we had that big award and got all this recognition, we brought in over 62 properties in December and January alone. It was like drinking water out of two fire hydrants at once. And the team, we got through it amazingly, and we're kind of prepping this year that it's probably going to be another big blast of people coming over. I mean, we signed up 8 properties in July, and that's unheard of. I mean, people don't switch companies in the middle of the summer. The other big thing we've got going, Stuart, is we are building a state-of-the-art 4,000 square foot laundry facility.
Okay.
And I'm going to have Beach Ball will be all under one roof. It will be cleaning, maintenance, marketing, management, anything, one-stop shop right here with Beach Ball. And Ginger and I are very proud that, we've been able to save up and work to a point that we could bring laundry in-house.
Gotcha. So, because how would owners navigate that prior? Or how would you guys navigate that prior to having a facility?
Yeah, prior to that, you just have to hire subcontractor cleaners. And it's kind of odd. We've actually learned a lot recently. In most vacation rental markets, the management company actually owns the linens, the towels, the bed sheets, all that good stuff. And they just hire kind of cleaner subcontractors coming and going. What's a little flipped here on the Alabama Gulf Coast, you actually have the cleaning companies own the linens, and they kind of own a lot of the control. It's kind of a weird kind of business relationship with where when you get kind of caught up in the summer and you've got one subcontractor cleaning 50 of your units, you kind of have to be delicate on the situation because you can't really fire them because there's not somebody else that can come in and take on those 50 properties. You really don't want to make them very upset. So they just kind of start mailing in your work. And that was just the biggest thing was control for us. We had 5 different subcontractors. They all did things different ways. It didn't give us a standardization or the beach ball standard, as we call it now. And it was very frustrating, but we knew, in order to build a facility and build out your own cleaning, it's a challenge. And a lot of times it's finding that right person. And we were very blessed. We found somebody with 14 years industry experience that actually been following us on Facebook, had moved over to the area, actually approached us, actually applied to be a cleaner for us. And when I saw her resume, I was like, you're not a cleaner. I think you're a little bit more than that. And she has blossomed into running our entire, what we call property care department. Right now we're cleaning, I think 200 of our 260 are actually in-house. We still have one subcontractor holding the other 60. And once our facility is complete, we're hoping by middle of October, we'll be able to roll everything completely in-house. Also, Stuart, you had these subcontractors going to laundromats, doing laundry there. I mean, there are several laundromats in our area that are pretty much just dedicated to vacation rentals. And wow. You also look in our area, there's really only, I mean, everybody knows Brett Robinson. They've got their big, large laundry facility over on Canal Road. And there's two or three other, you know, my size companies that are doing laundry in house. But this will be a game changer for us because it'll put us in that upper echelon of, you know, top 5% businesses in our area that handles everything instead of piecemealing everything, which is not that Beach Ball wasn't already literally the best in the country. We just want to get better than that.
Mm-hmm. Hunter Ikes, just because I'm interested and I know you and Stuart talked last year, so I'm pretty sure you answered this, but how did you decide that this was a worthy business venture for you and for your family? Like, how did Beach Ball kind of get started? And from what he was telling me, it was like you got in before the Airbnbs of the world showed up and all of that. So how did you kind of navigate all that?
So that is the perfect question. We joke about it when we go to these conferences and we talk to our different, you know, peers in the industry and in different places, and we all kind of joke like, there's no PhD, there's no master's program for vacation rental short-term management. I mean, it's such a new thing. And a lot of us kind of fall backwards into it by accident. So my particular situation, I was working as a financial advisor. Ginger was working as a lawyer at a premise liability firm. And we were just, you know, we were in the middle class rat race. We just didn't really feel like we were getting anywhere. We're just, you know, working ourselves to the bone. And one of our family friends, his mom worked at this vacation rental management company down here in Gulf Shores. They had about 20 properties. They pretty much just let the business go. And she was like, you know, I think, Hunter, this is something, you know, you'd enjoy and you'd be good at. So I was like, okay, we'll go try it out. So I left financial advising. Ginger had the nice, good, you know, legal job. We had benefits covered. So, hey, let's kind of make this thing work. Well, about a month into us owning the business, Ginger's law firm had a female associate come back who made partner. And unfortunately, in order to pay her partnership salary, they had to find the money from somewhere, and they found it in Ginger's back pocket. So they didn't renew Ginger's contract. So she was like, you know, what are we going to do? And I was like, well, you can come help me, you know, with this business until you figure it out. Well, she ended up having a passion for it, and we went all in. We sold our house in Mobile. We sold our boat. I was selling clothes on eBay. We cashed out our 401ks. I mean, we went all in on this thing. And our original
goal. What year was that?
That was 2016. So Airbnb and Vrbo existed, but Airbnb was still more couch surfing at the time. Vrbo was still, you know, they were an online marketplace, but they weren't quite the Amazon of vacation rentals they are now. And that's kind of something I was going to tie into on this as well, is that once Ginger and I bought in, we were kind of looking at the market, and we weren't looking at things like traditional property managers that have been down here for, you know, 30 years. We were like, you know, what's going to be the next thing? And right there at the end of 2016, beginning of 2017, Vrbo and Airbnb both released a thing called Instabook, where used to you would have to reach out to the host, hey, I'm Hunter Harrelson. I'm a really great guy. I promise I won't wreck your place. Please, can I rent your place? And they would have to accept you, right? Now you just click, click, boom, you're in, right? I mean, another thing that's transitioned, when we first started the company, people came to our office to physically get keys to check in. Now everything's on digital coded locks. You get a code sent to your phone on an app. And
makes it so much easier. Yeah,
it is easier. It's a catch-22 though, Stuart, for the property manager. Like, we're glad that it's easier, but a lot of times people will come in and out of a place and then complain about it online a week later, and we're like, well, you never told us anything. And it kind of makes us like a faceless corporation, and that's not who Beach Ball wants to be branded as. We want to be that family friendly, you know, adventurous, you know, you have the best vacation you can down here, because we want you to come back, whether it's with us or not. We want you to come back and enjoy the Alabama Gulf Coast.
And that's incredible. And, you know, I just found it was so interesting. Like, and I was talking about this with Stuart yesterday, and I just found what y'all kind of, you hit the market at the perfect time. And then obviously a couple of years later, you know, COVID happens, and obviously everyone slowed down a little bit, but it seemed like y'all just continued to keep chugging along. How did y'all manage that with people not traveling as much? But you guys seem to rebound just beautifully right after that.
So COVID was, I kind of compare it to the oil spill a little bit. It was the best worst thing that kind of could have happened to our area. So the worst thing was there's, I get chills. I'm literally getting chill bumps in here thinking about all this. But so on February the 9th of 2020, Ginger and I and Beach Ball Properties were awarded the Coastal Alabama Business of the Year down here. And that's not vacation rental management. That's all businesses down here.
Right.
I mean, that's, we would just, yeah. Well, thank you. I mean, obviously we're getting a trophy case built because we seem to keep stacking up.
Yeah.
But we had won that award, and I mean, we were just on a high, and we were just talking about, you know, what this was going to do for our business and how things were going to change. 6 weeks later, on March the 20th, Governor Kay Ivey shut down the beaches. And Ginger and I were looking at each other like, wow, we just went from the best business in the area to, do we even have a viable business? You know, are we even going to exist? So that really kind of got us, you know, we dug into politics a little bit. We started, you know, meet with our politicians and, you know, I guess lobbying to a degree on like, what do we do to get the beaches back open? And I'll tell you a little side story. We managed several houses down on West Lagoon, which is not directly on the beach. And a lot of these houses are pet friendly. So those five houses were actually booked during the beach shutdowns because people could work remote and they figure, well, I can't go to the beach, but I can at least, you know, go down here and, you know, smell the salt air and let Fido run.
Yeah,
out.
Go look
right.
at it.
Right, exactly.
Mediacom inadvertently cut a line and cut off internet to that road. So I'm literally in a panic. I've got five renters who have no internet who are all calling and griping at me about not having internet. What rent they're paying isn't even enough rent to keep my lights on. And I'm running to Walmart with a mask on to go buy little hot boxes so they can go and get off Verizon 10G so they can have internet so they're not complaining. I mean, that's the kind of steps, you know, we took. I can also tell y'all when we canceled all the reservations, we gave full refunds to everybody. We didn't try to fight anybody. We didn't understand what COVID was. They didn't understand what COVID was. I'll never forget writing 563,000 worth of refund checks.
Wow.
That was a scary couple of days. But anyway,
yeah.
So how do we get out of it? How do we rise out of it? Well, the next day that I remember is April the 28th at 11 a.m., Governor Kay Ivey came online and said that she was opening the beaches back up. Well, y'all may not remember Governor DeSantis over in Florida, even though beaches were open, he had banned vacation rentals. So Kay Ivey never banned vacation rentals. She just closed the beach. Y'all, after she made that announcement, at that time, that was our largest sales day in our history. We did over $100,000 in sales that day alone. Our phones were ringing off the hook. Online orders were coming through. It was outrageous because Mayor Kinnan and Kraft had kind of put it out there that like, hey, like, you know, the beaches are open. The beaches are a safe space. Come on down. I mean, if you could, you know, and again, it's crazy to think 3 years ago, there were people who couldn't leave their state. Right?
Right.
But yep. if you could leave your state, if you could get out of your house, you were going to go somewhere, and the beach was it. So,
yeah. And about that time, I was just going to say, you know, late April 2020, it was kind of about that time, you know, people are learning more, you know, it seemed like it was more of an indoor thing, you know, you were relatively safe in an outdoor space.
Yeah.
And I would say just hats off to, Governor Ivey and Baldwin County, because it seems like, you know, some states managed it better than others. And I would say Alabama, you know, we did 100%. A pretty good job of, you know, of keeping business open, but in a safe way. Just go ahead. Continue on what you were saying there. You said a record day, huh? On April 28th.
Yeah. April 28th was a record day and we used dynamic pricing. So the whole dynamic pricing computer system didn't know what to do because there was just so much demand coming through. So,
right.
2020 just, you know, and to a degree sometimes, you know, we were getting a little bit of negative publicity. We'd see people on Facebook and Facebook pages, you know, basically bashing us for allowing people to come down here and allowing being open and how dangerous we were. And I mean, now it's come out that apparently COVID dies in triple the time when it hits salt air. So, you know, it's funny to think when that onslaught of people were coming down here, the beach wasn't really getting sick with COVID. Like I remember sitting here thinking like, how is it blowing up? There's a million bazillion cases all over the country. And I don't know a single person here locally that's gotten it. And then it was kind of like after the tourists left, when it got cold, when we all went back indoors, that was when we had our first big, I guess, flare up down here in South Baldwin County. But anyway, I kind of want to kind of lead on to kind of what's happened since then. So 2020, yeah, we were the only game in town. Then 2021 rolls around. Now, by 2021, most of Alabama was opened up. Restaurants had kind of gone back to normal. The plexiglass had come down. But if you went to Michigan, that wasn't the case. They were still very, very locked down. You know, their governor was very, very contrarian to, you know, the Southern governors. You know, Illinois, Indiana, I mean, you know, I hate to make it a blue state, red state thing, but it very much was politicized that way. But yes, sir, a lot of the blue state people in 2021 still had to come to our beaches. Now, we said that we had to compete with Florida then, and we had to compete with the Carolina beaches to a degree, but we still had people coming down here like gangbusters. And one specific scenario I like to use is in 2019, if you owned a 3-bedroom, 2-bath directly on the beach, $350 a night was a pretty good going rate. If you could get over $350, you usually had a really, you know, show-stopping condo. That same condo in 2021, we were getting between $650 and $800 a night that were people were willing to pay to come down to the beach. Well, you guys,
market prices. Yeah. That's the market. You know, yeah. Working its, yeah,
supply and demand, right? Well, not absolutely only did that happen, the real estate and the investment side of things shot up. So I know y'all have seen through, I mean, not just here locally, but I mean, throughout the country, you know, real estate started going up as much as 20 and 25%. And I think down here as much as 35% areas. So it just became very wild, wild west. I mean, obviously property managers, we were making money hand over fist. We would say $1,000 a night, $1,500 a night. People would pay it, whatever. So, you know, I hate to say we took advantage of it, but we took advantage of the situation. But it wasn't just me; it was every property manager, it was every business down here. We were the happy-go-lucky gang. Well, then 2022 rolls around, and things started to normalize a little bit. A lot of us kind of kept our rates up, but what I was hearing from like the local restaurants and the car rental companies, slingshot rental companies, you know, their numbers were down last year. And I'm like thinking, well, that's weird. We were kind of flat. Why would y'all be down? Well, we realized people were paying the extra money that they didn't really have to take the vacation, but they didn't have the extra money to buy food, extra food, or go out to eat, or rent a slingshot, or rent a, you know, go-kart, or whatever it may be. Well, then now fast forward to 2023, and things are peeling back even more. So to give you a couple of numbers, VRBO told us back in February that our market had 5.6% more inventory, but they were already tracking an 11% drop in occupancy. So that's kind of like, that's almost kind of like a pick six in the, as a football analogy. You know, not only do you lose the occupancy, now there's even more supply out there. So you're actually stretching it out bigger. That affects right. everything. So, you know, me and my revenue management team, we got together, we started, you know, just tracking numbers, tracking a little bit harder, because 21, 22 was, we didn't have to market. We didn't have to put things out on Facebook. We didn't have to give deals. And I was like, look guys, we're going to start cutting deals again. We're going to start doing, you know, 15% off, you know, last minute bookings, things of that nature. And fortunately I can tell you guys, I looked at the numbers right before we got on this podcast. Beach Ball's up 3% on occupancy. We're up about 34% on revenue. Now, the market itself is down about 13% on occupancy, and the United States market is actually down about 25% on occupancy. Now, that sounds alarming, but really all that means is people are now going back to Costa Rica. People are going back on cruises again. People are flying
That's
to Jamaica.
That's a good point. Yeah, the international travel has...
Right. Yeah. I think in that same time in February and March, we had been told that something like 75% of international travel had already been booked. So, you know, those are the types of things that me and my team that, you know, we're constantly doing market research. We're not just sitting here in our little bubble and just focusing on, oh, what's our occupancy here? Like, I need to know what the market's doing. I need to know if people are coming to our area. Are they planning on going to Florida this year, or, you know, whatever that may be.
Gotcha. And so, so yeah, just speaking of Florida, you know, obviously, do y'all do business in Florida as well? You know, just like the part that's, you know, close to Gulf Shores, or y'all just strictly Baldwin County?
We're strictly Baldwin County for now. My wife is always beating me over the head because she wants to get over to Perdido Key. She feels like that's the next big boom. She feels like, I mean, people that listen to this podcast probably know who Beale Harbert is. Well, Beale Harbert just built his own condominium complex in Santa Perdido Key called, It's not Politico, but it's something co like that with a P. But anyhow, that's beside the point. But I think he went down there with his own money and financed it to build it. I mean, for a contractor to go build a, you know, 15-story, you know, 5-unit per floor condominium complex is wild. So there's definitely some market for it. But the other thing about Perdido Key, and the reason I'm not really jumping on it just now, is it's hard to get to, right? If you're coming from Alabama, that means you've got to come down 59, come through all that traffic. Then you've got to work your way across the two-lane, across Floribama to get to it. Or the other option is you come down through Cantonment or Pensacola and come that way. But there's not really like a direct hit on it. And then
right. Yeah, Pensacola, no straight shot.
Correct. And Pensacola Beach is decent. I mean, they've got some decent condos. And, you know, you get down there in the Gulf Breeze, and then you get into the 38. But it's so competitive in Florida, and everybody wants to be in Florida. And our little bubble here in Alabama is kind of interesting. You know, you don't see big outside of Acasa, you don't see big companies, big brands coming in and buying out Alabama operations. You don't see Beach Ball selling out. You don't see Liquid Lice, Young Suncoast. You don't see us selling out to the fly by night to the people coming from Florida trying to get in this area. I mean, I look at Brett Robinson. They're not building condos over in Florida. They're building everything right here. So I still think there's a lot. There's tons of growth here that we can focus on. But if the right portfolio or the right investor came to us in Florida, we would probably, you know, definitely look hard under the hood at making that move.
Interesting. Yeah. And so kind of shifting gears a little bit, we talked a little bit about consumer preferences last time, but any changes over the last year and what, you know, consumers are looking for in a vacation rental?
Not particularly. I mean, I think we mentioned last year, it's still again the same this year. 1 out of 4 is looking for a pet-friendly accommodation. So if you've right. got an investment property and you can allow a pet, do it. And that's not just here, that's nationally. The other thing we've seen is the larger size units. People are more looking for, two families are now looking for 4-bedroom units as opposed to 2-bedroom units. We're seeing that bathroom count is becoming a bigger deal. So you look at these contractors, like, you know, I mentioned Brett Robinson earlier, you know, they're building 2 or 3 new buildings, and most of the floor plans are 4 bedrooms and some 5 bedrooms. They're not even fooling around with 1s and 2s anymore. I guess right. they think the market's already saturated enough with those. And go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, with our family, a lot of times, you know, like, you know, either my folks or my wife's folks, you know, it'll be like a multi-generational trip, you know? And so, yeah, so the larger units will make sense.
Right. And I think, you know, it's, you save money that way, right? If you're splitting the cost and the way it all breaks down, it's cheaper to rent 1 4-bedroom than 2 2-bedrooms.
Absolutely.
And the bathroom count, you know, again, we've seen it, like there are tons of 3-bedroom, 2-bath condos down here. I mean, that was the condo to build in the 90s, right?
Well, it was.
And I tell all of my owners, heads in beds, right? I try to fill those condos up. So a lot of our 3-bedrooms sleep as many as 10 people. Well, there's only 2 bathrooms. So, you know, mom and dad's going to get the master. But now mom and dad are the primary. Actually, we started using the term primary now because that seems to be the new trend. Talk about trends. People are using the term primary.
Yeah.
But you got the primary bathroom and the primary bedroom. You know, mom and dad have now got to share that bathroom with somebody else, or you've got 8 people using 1 bathroom, kind of looking like the Brady Bunch in there. So that's kind of the thing where, you know, we're seeing that trend of the building, but unfortunately we can't go back and retro the old building. So it kind of hurts them as well. The other thing the trend we've seen, which I don't necessarily know it's a good thing down here, but beach cottages, right? If y'all been down here to visit this area in the last 3 to 4 years, you see them, these little 2-bedroom, 3-bedroom stacked up little cottages. I mean, they're almost like condos. There's maybe 4 foot of space between the two buildings, right? Those started blowing up about 3 or 4 years ago, and I just was like, I don't see it. Well, the rental numbers just went crazy with them. Well, now every Tom, Dick, and Harry is trying to build another one of those little cottage communities, and now it's hurting the ones that are already existing. Because now the new ones are coming in and people are renting the new ones, not the ones that are 3 or 4 years old. So, you know, we've got to be careful over the next few years of oversaturating and not being just relying so much on 2021.
Yeah, That's such a great point. You bring up so many great points there with that. And like I said, I apologize for going backwards first, but now I'm going to kind of jump forwards off of what you're talking about there. Is if you were to kind of project, Hunter, in the next 5 or so years, where would you like to see your company, and where would you like to see just the rental market as a whole?
So the two biggest things, I know our 2025 goal, which I know is a little bit shorter term than 5 years, but we'd like to be at 500 properties by then. At 500 properties, we'll have all the properties in-house, all the maintenance, all the cleaning. And we want to reevaluate at that point. Like, are we comfortable? Or you know, obviously, Junior and I live a great lifestyle now. For us, it's about growth and just what can we be to the community and how can we give back and how can we give to our employees. But we'd like to get to that 500 number and see where we want to go from there. If we want to keep pushing it, or is that a stable place? Because I've heard from the industry, when you get over 500, then you got to start looking at, you know, bringing in more partners. You've got to look in at acquisitions, and that's kind of like that break even for that large corporation. So that's really right now our goal for that. As far as the market, I would like some more. You hear this in college football all the time, but I like some more market parity, right? So yeah. One of the biggest things that we all fight with our owners and each other is rates, right? So just, you know, in a nutshell, y'all have all, you know, heard of the turquoise, right? So
yep.
The turquoise, every single unit in the turquoise is either a 3-bedroom or a 4-bedroom. They're the same floor plan. They're the same tile floors. They're the same granite. They're the same, you know, was it zero freeze, refrigerators and freezers and everything. The only difference in the units is how the owner chose to decorate them and how many it sleeps, right? I guarantee you, if you pull up VRBO or Airbnb right now and just type in turquoise and pick a random week next July, you're going to get 250 different rates realistically, unless it's the same management company management. Well, How hard is that for the consumer to try to decide? Are they deciding like, oh, well, this one's more expensive, it must be nicer. Oh, this one's less expensive, or I'm going to pay for the cheapest one. You know, what should it be? I feel like there should be more parity out there. Like, sure, if it sleeps 10 over 8, yes, that should be priced a little higher. Yes, if they put all high-end furnishings and this person put in, you know, hospital beds, yes, there should be some difference there, but there's not really much of that. And VRBO is kind of mentioned out there and hinted around, and Airbnb is trying to put some parity things out there. You know, the other part is we all charge different fee structures, but I really would like to try to get that rate parity, because it's such an argument with an owner when an owner's like, I went online and I saw that my neighbor was making $20 more a night. Okay, Mr. Customer, what were the dates you were looking at? What time of year was it? Yeah, and they don't give you any of those things. They just tell you like, my neighbor's making $20 more than me. And then You've got to go through this whole rigmarole, and then you dig down and then you realize, well, the neighbor really isn't renting as much. They're renting less than you are. You're making more money. Yeah, there's this whole fight. So if there was more parity, I could be like, no, look, in that building, that's the going rate. That's what your rate is. That's what we've got you at. You know, beach ball can actually, you can stand alone on your difference, not just your rate.
Yeah, that's a good point. So talking about the amenities down there, one thing that we've historically gone to the 30A area, you know, which we love. It's great. Every now and then we'll get down to Gulf Shores with some friends. But one thing that I'm just, you know, one of the limitations of 30A is the water access, you know, which obviously y'all have an abundance, you know, there throughout, you know, all the different marinas, et cetera. And so how much do you think that's a driver of the overall vacation scene down there? Do you think a lot of your customers, are they going out fishing? Are they wanting to spend any time on the water? You know, any observations you have there?
Absolutely, because Orange Beach had to put a moratorium on boat rental companies last year and this year, because literally every other week, Tony Kennan was getting a application for a boat rental company. It was almost becoming Wild Wild West. You had some that were just running without even a license. They were, you know, just going out there because, you know, Stuart, you've probably driven a boat on a lake. I've driven a boat on a lake. I can drive a boat, right? Well, if you're driving,
you don't learn it overnight.
Right. But like down here though, you've got to be licensed. You got to have a captain's license. There's all this, you know, you can't obviously be drinking on the boat. There's all these, you know, regulations to it. But point being, I remember being in high school and having a friend with a boat and getting on the boat and going out to Bird Island and Robinson Island. And, you know, there, it might be a little tight to find a parking spot, but you could usually park. it's starting to turn into Crab Island out there on weekends now. I mean, people are anchoring out into the sandbar, almost getting out into the cut through there for boats to get through. It's almost becoming a little dangerous. But the boating is, yeah, it's off the charts. Fishing's about the same. I mean, you've got a few more boats. I mean, they came back in and rebuilt Zeke's Marina, and they really, you know, buffed it up to be able to handle more fishing. You know, Sportsman's Marina is more the, you know, the owner's boating, not really charters going out of that. And Orange Beach Marina, you know, is the big money marina. That's where the big daddy boats all come out of.
Yeah, that's a cool marina. I'd never been there until this time last year. Got lucky and went. But yeah, talk about some big old boats. I mean, I was shocked.
Yeah, that's the marina. Then I mean, and the crazy thing is, there's a millionaire wait list to get in there. I mean, it's just wild. You can't even throw money at them to get in. But no, I mean, it's a draw. But the marketing, honestly, I mean, 30A. I mean, people just think of 30A. They did a great marketing technique with those 30A stickers, and then you got Seaside. I mean, it's a T-shirt that says Seaside on it, and basic font, but my God, if you go down there, you've got to have one, right?
Yeah, it's iconic, right?
It is. I mean, it's kind of like, I guess the Orange Beach shirt's kind of becoming here. And I use this term, and Ginger's just like, you've got to quit using it. But I'm like, it's true. I don't hide behind it. I mean, we're discount destined, right? I mean, you come here because you want a little bit slower pace. You don't want quite as much traffic. You don't want to drink with your pinky up in the air when you're drinking your tea. Yeah, you just kind of feel a little more, you know, you feel a little more homely here, right? So at one thing, I don't think we're ever going to draw the Buckhead crowd to Orange Beach, right? They're going to continue to go to 30A. But I think we do surprise a lot of people that come from Michigan and come from Illinois and Indiana that are like, man, you know, the split in Montgomery, I can either cut down 231 or I can keep going down 65. And we've just got a few that are coming down 65. One thing I would like to see, and this is just something I'm just, you know, maybe on a soapbox, but right now, if you're coming from Birmingham, coming to Orange Beach, you've got to come down 65. You've got to get off in Bay Minette, then you have to dogleg down 5 miles down 10 and then come down the Beach Express. Well, there were plans, and they've actually got it built out where they can build the expressway all the way to 65, just a straight shot. Well, unfortunately, that four-letter word, toll, came out, and they wanted to put a toll on it, and they put it out to vote, and the people in Fairhope and, I guess, Daphne and North Baldwin County, they shot it down. They shot the coastal down, and we couldn't believe it. We were like, why would you not want this? And everybody's like, tolls are bad, and I'm like, you live in Fairhope. You'll never use this toll. You'll always come across 98. Like, why? Like, let the tourists pay the toll. If you want to pay the toll, then save the dollar and go the dog leg, right? But I really wish that the state could figure out a way without a toll or without it going to a vote or without, you know, becoming politicized, connect that in, because that would make, I mean, that would cut off 15 to 20 minutes off the trip for anybody coming north. Now, people coming from the West, that's a whole another political issue. You start talking about the new I-10 bridge and the tolls there, and then you really get ugly with those Fairhope and Daphne people that drive back and forth to Mobile for work. So that's a future thing that our state and our politicians are going to have to figure out. We're going to have to open up that bayway and open up an easier access to 65, because people aren't stopping coming down here, and developers aren't stopping building. I mean, the building permits, there's probably three developers right now getting permits at the office in downtown.
For sure. Yeah, definitely a growing area. And so, I mean, Baldwin County, I'm assuming the growth has continued. You know, I've seen, you know, the population continues to grow. You know, obviously the new construction market there, very robust. So the growth's pretty much continuing, right?
It is.
For the most part. Yeah.
For the most part, it's still growing. I mean, sales are down, but again, that goes back to, you know, something I was alluding to earlier. If you look at 2019 and heck, even some of 2020, we're still pacing very well, but numbers are going to look down compared to 21 and 22. So
yeah,
it's not all doom and gloom, but it's just not as heyday as it was a couple of years ago.
Sure. Yeah. And of course, a lot of that's interest rates, you know, and the market probably needed a little bit of a cooling off period, you know, considering how overheated it got, you know, price growth and all that, you know, well, of course the inflation component, but
the thing that gets me though is people talk about a recession, right? And, you know, the recession and Biden and Fox News is beating on the recession and whatnot. And it's a recession, but not nearly what we had, you know, back in 2008, 2009. But I don't know how much recession we're going to have, because every other investor I know or every other person has a little bit of money, they're all sitting there rubbing their hands together and licking lips going like, I'm ready for it to turn. I got so much cash. I'm going to buy, buy, buy. Well, how are you going to have a recession if everybody runs out of money and then everybody with money comes in and buys it all up? So there's still plenty of cash out there on the sidelines. I hear it every day.
That's a good point. Right. Yeah. And of course, the talk of the housing recession has kind of cooled down, because that obviously didn't exactly unfold. You know, yeah. Prices, which is the main thing, you know, sales have slowed, but they're supposed to. But prices are holding steady for the most part. Right. And that's really, you know, that's the big difference than, say, you know, the Great Recession, you know, the housing crisis back, you know, around 08,
yeah,
when you saw declining home values, you know, for almost 2 years. But fortunately that, and also the foreclosures, you know, the wave of foreclosures, a lot of them, you know, the homeowner was in a bad position from the beginning. You know, maybe they could, you know, they got a loan that maybe they wouldn't qualify for these days. Right. And so, yeah, there are not so many the foreclosures, they've ticked up a bit, but it's not in, you know, it's not to a point where it's like crisis mode.
Right.
But yeah, but I agree with you there with talks of the recession, because they've been talking about that for a while now. And you look at, you know, all the employment numbers, you know, most of the economic indicators are, you know, generally positive. Of course, you know, you get into, you know, certain aspects of commercial real estate, like office, et cetera, you know, that's a whole different story. You know, there are some major issues on the commercial side, just with, you know, driven by interest rates. But that's good to hear that Baldwin County, I mean, it's, and talk about a resilient area. Because, you know, between the hurricanes, the oil spills, the COVID year, I mean, it's just kind of like y'all just continually bounce back, you know, nothing can keep y'all down.
We're a bunch of fighters down here for sure. You know, I hear the people talk about it, that the toughest year was the oil spill, and thankfully BP and the government came out right and made those people whole. But the thing I do want to point out is what helps us is we're a drive to market, right? So It doesn't necessarily mean you're completely recession proof like a bar or a barber would be, but you're in a situation where people are still going to go on vacation. So let's just go back to 2008, 2009 when people hardly had any money, your mortgages were upside down, et cetera, et cetera. Well, yeah, you may not spend 10 grand and go down to Turks and Caicos for 4 or 5 days. But my God, I can go rent a condo for $2,500, and you know, it costs me $200 in gas, and we can cook a couple of, you know, burgers on the grill to save on money. So people would still come down here; they would still spend their money. You know, it wouldn't just be just you know, throwing it up in the air money, but they at least would spend something to keep us all afloat down here. So that's a saving grace, being that drive to market. Because you think about it, I think you can get to St. Louis, Missouri, within 13 to 16 hours. So, I mean, if you draw that kind of bubble around that, that's a lot of the country that can get here within a day's drive.
Absolutely. And many people, the Midwest, I think you mentioned that earlier, but that's something I've noticed, you know, even, especially in the 30A area, but folks from Indiana, Ohio, you know, Missouri, many more vacationers from that part of the country, you know, than say 10 or 20 years ago when it was, you know, pretty much just the Deep South.
Right. Well, the oil spill was probably one of the best marketing campaigns we ever could have had. You had CNN, MSNBC, Fox News, ABC, everybody. They're down here on the beach showing everybody tar balls. And the number one response was, Alabama's got a beach. It's like, wait, Alabama has a beach. So yeah, it was big. I remember that summer we were down here. Selfishly, it was awesome. There was nobody here. We could eat anywhere. We could get in, get out. There were parts of the bay that still didn't have oil in it that we could still ride around on our boats and dip around and go to Pirate's Cove. So it was a fun little summer having the island to ourselves for a change.
Yeah, make the most of it.
That's right.
So, Hunter, I kind of want to wrap this up and kind of go a little bit off the beaten path here. I know you're a big football guy. I know you're a Bama guy. And two things I really have with that. One is obviously a Bama prediction. What do you think of the season that's upcoming? But two, for you, just you know, in a business sense, do you see a lot of traffic for when the football schedule kind of heats up a little bit more? Do you see a lot of traffic, or is that a little bit more of a cooler season for you?
So football doesn't really affect us down here. I mean, away weekends, you may get a few extra rentals than a home weekend. The good thing is Auburn, Alabama, they kind of balance off of each other. But now football is not really affected for us. The biggest thing for us is which I don't know what time this podcast is going to come out, but I'm going to age it a little bit. But yesterday, most schools in the state started back, right?
So yeah, we went back yesterday.
So this past weekend was our last kind of hoorah. So from now until the end of the year, it's mostly dinks. If y'all know what that is,
dual income, the dual income, no kids. Yeah. Right. That's a big segment.
You got dinks. You've even got couples like me and my wife's age. Like, we're younger, but both of our kids are not in school, so we can travel. You've got the empty nesters. So that's kind of what we are, you know, that's who we're pushing right now. So our August actually as a whole for us is actually shaping up really well. It's actually, the numbers are trending higher than last year. September and October are looking good as well. I don't know if that's necessarily weather related, but that's the other thing too, is we've got to have good weather throughout the rest of the fall. I mean, if you get a bunch of rain, you get a bunch of, you know, if it gets cold earlier or crappy weekends, because nowadays with the internet, people can book 3 days out. You know, people are watching the weather a lot more. Now, to get back to your football prediction. So I used to be a huge Bama Online nerd. I mean, I was all into like every little thing. Recently I have made some inroads with people in the athletic department. I cannot share any names, obviously, but I've been getting some little tidbits of information. The biggest thing that concerns me is going to be the quarterback, because I do believe Milroe is a freak of nature. I do believe he is. When that man has the ball in his hand, I think he's electric. But I don't think he's very accurate as a quarterback. So I think right now Saban and Reese are just every day probably eat, sleeping, and drinking. Are we going to run the damn ball this year, or are we going to try to pass? Because I think that got us in trouble a little bit with Bryce Young.
Did.
That we were just – he was so incredible that we relied everything on him. We literally made him do everything. We would get away from the run. Bill O'Brien just abused that man, and he stayed healthy. You know, first overall pick. I mean, it's amazing. But if they decide they want to run the ball more, run option, try to treat him like a Lamar Jackson type, then we're going to be running, and it's going to be interesting. I think if they decide, no, we need to do more play action, deep throws, you're going to see Ty Simpson in there. Now, my athletic department intel says Ty Simpson's the quarterback, that he's just got to take the team over, that he's got to convince the team that it's his. Mm-hmm. Now, that's what Saban usually means when he says something like that. Is like, you got to take the team, you got to whatever. He's usually telling the backup, like, you've got to buck up with these guys, because if you don't, I'm going to leave the starter or somebody who's got playing experience in there. I think our running backs, I don't think we have necessarily a Najee Harris like game changer, but I think we're solid. The freshman, I think his last name's Hayes. I think he's going to surprise a lot of people. I think he's going to – I think he could be the starter if you didn't have McClellan already.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
The new receiver that's come in, I think it's Benton, I think is his last name. I think he's going to be the real deal, the butt-naked truth, as my brother says. So that's what they've got to try to figure out, is do we have the receiving core? Because we had dropsies last year, right? And if they can't trust the receivers to catch, they're going to heavy run, and it's probably going to be Milroe. If the receivers can catch, it's probably going to be Ty Simpson, and we're going to run more of a play-action type offense you saw back with, like, A.J. McCarron back in the –
Right. Yeah, I'm hoping we can run the ball more and control the clock.
Yeah.
Because that's classic Bama football right there, you know.
Yeah.
Smash mouth and mean, that's for sure. That's what people want.
And then defensively we'll be strong. I mean, Kool-Aid's going to be a top 10 pick. Defensive line, I think, solid, but nobody – if Otis steps up, I mean, you'll have somebody strong, but nobody's really a game changer there. Linebackers, you know, they're still unknown. We're going to be new there. I think the back end, believe it or not, mark my words on this, I think the back end of the defense will be better this year with the young talent than we were last year with the more senior-laden DBs. Mm-hmm. I just feel like they're just so talented. I mean, you've got Caleb Downs is coming in starter day one from spring training. I mean, he's the real deal. So prediction wise, I like the fact that the tough games are at home. You know, we catch Tennessee at home. We catch LSU at home. We catch Texas at home. Those were the three boogers for us last year. Texas will be a night game this year, so we won't be quite as hot. I think we win that one. I think we get revenge on LSU. I think Tennessee's going to throw the book at us. That's a mulligan game, realistically. I still think we make the SEC. I got to see more of Georgia this year with their new quarterback to make a determination on that. But my gut is we make the playoff, but I don't want to call championship just yet until I see it, you know, at least see that Texas game.
That's right. Yeah, we're going to learn a lot about what we're made of at that Texas game, because that was a big surprise for me last year.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Just eking by with a, you know, field goal victory.
Yeah, and that game was unbelievable.
Well, let's be honest. Sarkisian had that game circled for 2 years. They literally probably spent all spring, all summer training every aspect of everything about Bryce, his tendencies. And they called us at 11 a.m. when it was like 110 degrees on the field.
Texas heat.
Texas heat. And I'll tell y'all, look, we're from Alabama. It's hot. It's muggy. Like, I'm proud Southerner that I can deal with the heat. But I can tell you, I went to Austin, Texas a couple months ago for a conference. It's hot in Austin, Texas, and the campus is downtown, and it's nothing but concrete. There's not a tree, a bush, a piece of blade of grass to soak up any heat. I mean, it's in the middle of the jungle, the concrete jungle there. So I'm glad we won that game, but there were a lot of factors going into it that were not playing. I mean, there's scuttlebutt that I heard that the power to the ACs didn't work in the locker room, but Saban brought air conditioned fans because he thought something like that would happen. You know, there's all kind of stuff you hear, you know, that eats its
way
out.
For sure. Well, we have our new resident football expert. You've given us all the details here. So anytime we need to talk football, I know who we're going to call, because you got the. You were saying you don't read about it as much as you used to. It's hard to believe after hearing all these names and the intel. And
you don't need to read; he's got the inside scoop already.
You got it, man. You got it.
My best prediction ever, though, was in 2009. I was living in Selma, and they were supposed to be we were in the quarterback club, and these two guys were supposed to come down from Birmingham to come speak. Well, apparently something happened; they couldn't make it. So we just kind of had a meeting. The president got up and he talked, and they pulled me up. I don't know. Well, I guess because I'm a big Bammer and I just graduated from school at the time. So they brought me up, and they brought another guy named Andy Stewart who had played golf at Auburn. And they had Andy give his, you know, prediction for the season for Auburn. They had me give Alabama's. And I said, I think Alabama plays Texas in the national championship, and I think Alabama beats Texas. The room laughed at me. And that was the year we beat Texas in the BCS national championship.
That's what got it started back on the upward swing. Yeah, that was a very memorable game there.
Absolutely. I wish I had the newspaper clipping still of my prediction in there and everybody laughing at me.
That would be something. Well, Hunter, this has just been it's been a fabulous episode. Thank you for joining us today. And also thank you, you know, as a Alabama cabinet member, Beach Ball Properties, we just really appreciate your support. And enjoy working together. And so I just wanted to say that. And this has been very entertaining and very insightful. So thanks for joining us today.
Absolutely. You know, I love it.
Yeah. Well, any final thoughts here as we wrap it up?
No, just if anybody out there is looking for a fall vacation, check out our website, beachballproperties.com. If you're old school, you can call us at 251-968-8896. And always my tagline is, come have a ball at the beach.
Heck yeah.
Love it.
Yeah. And that's a great domain, by the way, beachballproperties.com.
Perfect.
Yeah. All right. Well, hey, Hunter, this has been fabulous. Thanks for joining us. Hope y'all enjoyed the show.
Absolutely. Thank you.